One of my students sat in on one of the programs that I hosted last week, and on the way out, somehow we got around to talking about owls, and I said, you know, owls start mating in December, and so they're laying and hatching eggs into January and February, and he was absolutely amazed. Maybe you didn't know that owls start mating in December. We'll find out why with our guest today, Carla Bloom. She is the executive director of the International Owl Center based in Houston, Minnesota. Beside the owl breeding season, we'll be talking about snowy owl sightings, the upcoming International Festival of Owls. What owls are you seeing or hearing in your area? Would you like to know about owl behavior? I hope you do, and I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org or post a Twitter question on the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly always love to hear from you. And Carla Bloom, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
It's fun to be here again.
I'll tell you what, always nice to talk about things at the International Owl Center. How are things going there?
We're keeping hopping, gearing up for the International Festival of Owls in a few weeks.
Yeah, we'll certainly talk about that when we as we go through the show. Anything new from since last year when we talked with you at the center?
Good question. I assume there's something new.
There's always something new there, for gosh sakes, Carla.
We just met with an architect. We're working on some plans for our future home to build our own place instead of just having a temporary home in a storefront downtown. So that's always exciting.
Yeah. What about that question my student asked me? Why the heck do they mate in December or begin mating in December?
They start so early because if you're a great horned owl, it takes a long time to get those kids hunting well enough that they can be self-sufficient. So that's why they start early.
And they're sitting on eggs in January, aren't they?
Yeah, around here, this far north, it usually wouldn't be until late January or early February is when it would usually happen this far north. Now, if you're down in Texas, sure, December, they'd be sitting on eggs.
You'd have to, if you're an owl and it's January, end of January in Wisconsin or Minnesota or Michigan for that matter, you got to spend your time, most of your time on the nest, don't you?
Yes, you do. So one of the things that we're doing is we're working with people who just like to observe owl cams. So we're specifically looking at great horned owl cams and asking some of the observers to track the incubation breaks, because this is something that's never been studied before, because it's really, really cold. So how long of breaks at what temperatures can those eggs handle and still have the young ones hatch? So we have volunteers well around the country and around the world who are logging data into some shared Google Docs, and we're tracking that information because no one's done it before. And it's just citizen scientists who want to help us learn more.
Have you learned, you probably don't have the final answer, but basically how long typically are they away from the nest?
Typically it's probably not more than 15 minutes for the most part. And then again, that's going to vary with temperature. So the colder it is, the less. But what we also have seen with some females in some years is that they don't start incubating in earnest when the first egg is laid. Now, that contradicts what's in the published literature. It says that they start incubating immediately when the first egg is laid. And many of them do, but some of them don't, and their eggs are hatching anyway. So that's new, exciting information that's coming from the citizen scientists who are watching these cams.
That is very, very cool. Steve in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go there. Steve, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yesterday, I was traveling along the lakeshore in Milwaukee on the Hohen Bridge, I saw a bird up on top of one of the light poles, and I thought, so I pointed out to my son, who's in the back seat, and I said, oh, look, there's a hawk, because we have hawks all over the place, right?
Yep.
So as we approach it, the color was all wrong. It was kind of a white and sort of dirty white look to it. And so I thought, oh, I must be seeing a seagull perched up there, which is odd, but nonetheless. But the shape was completely wrong. And as we passed by, my son, who was in the back seat on that side of the car, said that it was a snowy owl. And he is adamant that he saw the face and that it was a snowy owl perched up there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on top of a light pole on top of the Hoehn Bridge in Milwaukee along the lake run.
Yeah, that is very cool. Comment on that, Carla. How does that happen?
That's very, very, very possible, and I would certainly expect that that is what you saw. Snowy owls very often are along the lakefront during the winter. That's a very typical place for them to hang out, and I know there's been a lot over there. And these guys hang out in open places. They tend not to be hiding in trees like other owls because they're from the tundra where it's flat and open. They're not used to being in trees. They're not used to being in secluded areas. So when they're down here, they're in these wide-open areas. They're on beaches. They're on airports. And they're usually not hiding in a tree like we are used to expecting around here from owls.
You know, there's conflicting comments as to why the snowy owls come down here. Some people say that it's because there's a lack of food and, you know, where they normally would be. Others say, no, that's not true. There are other things going on. What's your opinion?
Well, the official opinion from the experts is we don't know exactly what's going on. So if somebody tells you they know exactly what's going on, they don't know exactly what's going on. So in talking to the guys who are doing the research up on the breeding grounds up in Barrow, Alaska, and up in north central Canada, way up there in Nunavut, what they seem to be seeing, and this year maybe a little bit different because the two guys who are studying the breeding grounds did not have breeding this last year. But there was some anecdotal evidence that somewhere in between them where there's a few people, I don't know if they're working on oil things or whatever, but they did see snowy owls breeding. So in the last few years, typically when we've seen a lot of snowy owls come south, there's been very good reproduction way up north on their breeding grounds. And reproduction doesn't happen unless there's a lot of food up there, which is generally lemmings. So if there's a lower number of lemmings, they either won't breed at all or they'll only lay a few eggs. If there's a lot of lemmings, then they lay a lot of eggs. So snowy owls are real dependent on the food up there. But then if they have a lot of babies, well, then everybody's got to eat once they grow up and fledge. So those seem to be the years when more owls come south. But now this year's been different because the two places that are studying the breeding didn't really have breeding. But as I mentioned, there was some anecdotal evidence that in other locations they did breed, and maybe that's why they're coming south. But then again, there's some years where they've come south, they came early, and then more of the birds were starving, which may have indicated that there was a lack of food that year. So we don't exactly know what's going on.
There you go. But Steve, you can be probably pretty sure you saw a snowy owl.
Yes.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Ed emailed to ask about guidelines for birdhouses for owls, general dimensions, hole size, distance from the hole to the bottom of the box, that sort of thing. Do we have bird boxes for owls?
For certain owl species, you can build nest boxes. Great horned owls are going to be less likely to use those in our area. Now, if you're further west where there's not as many trees, then they'll use kind of anything, old tire, laundry basket, whatever. And they may around here, but they usually in areas with plenty of trees, usually they can find something because they use an old hawk nest, squirrel nest, eagle nest, hole in a quarry wall. They're really adaptable. I mean, there's some places where they're nesting in planters on people's balconies of their houses. So greathorns kind of use whatever. So they're harder to attract to a nesting structure than a cavity nester like an eastern screech owl or a barred owl, or if you're farther north, even a saw-whet owl. And the saw-whet owl, screech owl, boreal owl, wood duck, and kestrel all basically use about the same box. And if you Google online, it's easy to find some exact instructions for how to do that. And some have a sloped roof. Key thing is you need to have some way that the box opens, whether that's on the side or the top, so that you can get in there and check and clean. Because other things like to use those boxes also. The box I've got up in my yard has been used by starlings. It's been used by squirrels. But it's also been used by screech owls. So you do want to be able to get in there and clean that other stuff out after the other critters have been using it. And don't give up. Barred owl nest box plans we do have on our website, and they're kind of a newer, innovative idea for a design for a barred owl box. It's one that's open on the top or partially open on the top rather than closed on the top like most barred owl box designs. This is a new design pioneered by the Illinois Raptor Center after they were doing some observations and realized most of the wild nests they found of barred owls weren't necessarily in a cavity in the side of a tree, but rather in the broken off top of a dead tree where it had rotted down. So it was more of a chimney style nest. So they've tried experimenting with taking the basic barred owl box design and cutting part of the top out, and then they started getting fewer raccoons and more barred owls because raccoons also like to use those boxes.
So you've had some success with them, and do you sell the plans then or just provide them on your website?
We provide them on our website. I think it's under our do-it-yourself section. We have a DIY section.
And what is your website?
InternationalOwlCenter.org.
InternationalOwlCenter.org is the place to go then, Ed, if you want to. And barred owls are, there are a lot of barred owls in Wisconsin for sure.
Yes, there are, especially in, they like thick woods, especially if you're near water.
Yeah. And the varieties, we have species, I should say, of owls. There are a lot of them in the Midwest.
Yeah, the main ones that people are going to bump into are the great horned owl, the barred owl, and the eastern screech owl, because those have pretty broad ranges, and they are year-round residents. You have snowy owls that pop in some years in the winter. Usually we get some, at least in the north and along the lake shores, and it to a varying degree elsewhere in the states.
We'll talk some more with Carla Bloom. We'll take a quick look at the news, though, first, and then we will be back to talk more about owls. Stay with us. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about owls today with our guest, Carla Bloom. She is Executive Director of the International Owl Center, located in Houston, Minnesota. Yeah, if you have some questions about owls, I hope you'll join in our conversation. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org or post on our Twitter page, The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly if you've got a good experience to share, we'd love to hear about that as well. Carla, the big event is coming up for you folks. It's the Festival of Owls, the International Owl Festival of Owls. What is it all about?
The International Festival of Owls is about just about everything you can think of that has to do with owls, and then multiply that by about 10. So we do everything owl. So, of course, we do live owl programs. That's kind of the backbone of our event. We're having the World Bird Sanctuary come in from St. Louis with birds this year. And new this year, we're trying something fun. We're doing a live video program from the Scottish Owl Center because they have about 50 different species of owls. Now, they're not going to be able to show all of them to us, but they have a whole lot of owl species from around the world that exist nowhere in captivity in the United States. So we're going to be able to experience a whole lot of owl species that you would never see anywhere in the United States. Through a live video program where you can ask questions and we'll get to see them flying. So that's going to be a really exciting, fun thing to do this year. So besides the live owl programs, we present the World Owl Hall of Fame Awards. So these are some of the top people in the world of owls, judged by their peers, and they come here to receive their awards and speak. So this year we're going to have Jonathan Haw from South Africa will be talking, and Lisa Owens-Viani, the woman behind RATS, Raptors Are the Solution, a project to actually get rid of rodenticides as much as possible and get people to use alternative methods for controlling rodents so that they wind up not poisoning hawks and owls. Both of them will be coming in person. And, of course, we do a ton of fun family things. So there's face painting, all kinds of crafts. There's a kids' owl calling contest. Let's see, what else? There's nest box building. There's pellet dissection. We do a banquet. We have bus trips both at night to call in wild owls and then a bus trip during the day. There's a medallion hunt and all kinds of owl-themed food. So literally you can go to the Lutheran Church in the morning on Saturday and have owl face pancake breakfast with real maple syrup. Mm-hmm. And Sub-Zero Pizza will have owl-shaped pizzas. The coffee shop will have owl-themed coffees. We'll have every kind of snack you can imagine looking like owls. It's just really fun. And we do an international owl photography contest where the people who come to the festival get to vote for their favorite owl photos out of the top 10, which are judged by photographers.
Go ahead.
One of the other really awesome parts of the festival is we do an international owl art contest for kids 18 years of age and under from around the world. This year we had just shy of 700 entries from 27 different countries, and those are judged by three retired art professors. So the winners will be in the Owl Center. The rest will be put up all over town in the storefront, so there will be owl art throughout all of Houston.
And it's March 2nd through the 4th, so coming up pretty quickly. And Houston, Minnesota, for Wisconsinites that wonder, where the heck's Houston, Minnesota? Where are you?
We're half an hour west of La Crosse, Wisconsin. We're not too far over the border.
No, you definitely are not. And you were talking about calls, and I think Tom in Hartford has something that may relate to calls. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I always enjoy listening to your shows. Where I live, I've been there a little over 15 years, and I've learned about birds, and I found out that I have mainly bar owls, B-A-R-R owls. And when I first moved there for the first few years, maybe 5 years, in the evening when they would call, it'd be really loud and aggressive, and it'd sound like a little monkey, like an orangutan, excuse me. And in the meantime, in the last 10 years or so, I've been I guess I'd say mimicking, you know, their sound back to them. And it's like they've focused on me now. And so they've gotten to know me, and their voices, their sound to me is smoother and quieter, a lot more calm. And they don't make an aggressive sound anymore. And I can call back and forth, and for maybe 5 or 10 minutes or so at a time, when they call, I mean, I wait till they call first, but it's changed quite a bit, and it's kind of neat to hear them. It's a real pleasant sound now. It's somewhat musical in a way.
Yeah, very cool. A comment, Carla.
Yes, barred owls are extremely vocal, and they have a highly varied repertoire. So the initial calls that you were talking about hearing are what we call caterwauling, and they're very often described as monkey calls or demonic laughter because they kind of sound like and all kinds of just weird, crazy things. And there's usually more than one bird doing it. And most normal people, if they didn't know what they were hearing, would run inside because it's freaky sounding. And they do this probably both in good and bad contexts when they are excited. So it could be good excited or bad excited. But barred owls are absolutely known for doing that caterwauling. And then what they're doing now is more of their regular territorial hoot, which is usually described as who cooks for you, who cooks for you all. So it sounds like, oh, 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 oh. And you can tell males from females because the male has a short awl on the end and the female has a longer awl, and her voice is a little higher. So the male is more of the ooh, 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 and the female ooh, 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 ooh.
Yeah.
And, of course, quite a bit of variation. So you should be able to tell the male from the female. And if you get really good at listening to your birds and listen to them a lot, you should be able to tell individual birds apart because each one should have their own nuances and their own little twist on how they do that who cooks for you part of their call.
No.
They'll actually get closer, too. They'll get within maybe 30 or 40 feet away up in the tree.
So what they're doing when they're coming closer, when you're calling, they're perceiving you as an intruder in their territory, and that's why they're coming in to check you out. So do be careful when you're doing active calling like that. You don't want to do it really repeatedly in the same area a lot, because it functionally winds up being a harassment to the bird, an irritation to them. And hopefully they would never perceive it as somebody trying to run them out. But you want to be careful about doing that. And there's some places where it's actually not legal to do active calling of owls because it winds up harassing the bird. So like national parks, it's not legal to do active owl calling. And it should be used very sparingly in other places where there are a lot of people. And, you know, on your private property, just be careful of not doing it repeatedly over and over and over again, because they're perceiving you as an intruder in their territory. And you don't want to be pestering them. I mean, obviously, you like the birds.
Yeah, obviously. Thank you so much, Tom, for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, he's having a lot of fun observing them. And I think there may be more owls out there than we realize.
Oh, there are absolutely way more owls than we realize, especially the small ones. Saw-whet owls are the smallest owl that we have in the eastern United States, and people used to not see them much. Well, actually, still, we don't see them much, but the people who run across them are all the people that are doing saw-whet owl banding now, who are putting up mist nets, which are kind of like fine volleyball nets, and then they're broadcasting the saw-whet owl call. And the owls don't necessarily call back, but they come in, and then they get caught in the nets. And the people who are doing saw-whet owl bandings are finding zillions of saw-whet owls. They're finding saw-whet owls in places they never would have expected to find saw-whet owls, and they're kind of everywhere. But they're so little, and they like to hang out in dense coniferous trees that the rest of us hardly ever see these little guys.
Yeah. Well, how about a bigger owl? Bill's got in Manitowoc has a question, I think, or a comment about a great horned owl. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, last winter, about this time of year, and I happened to be looking in my window. It was midnight, and I saw this. I thought it was a cat. It was about a foot and a half tall. It had the puffy ears, but then it flew away. And then I realized, probably that was maybe a great horned owl, and I realized that there was a rabbit in the bush next to him. And he flew back about a minute later. He went around that bush, and he scared the rabbit, and just it was the action was on. He was after that rabbit, and I didn't see the end of it, you know. But that was the most amazing thing I ever saw in my life.
Oh.
Fantastic. Yeah, you're lucky to be able to see that. And great horned owls especially have a very cat-like look to them. And even their personality is a little bit cat-like. It's, you know, kind of more aloof. Those of us who work with birds really see the connection between great horned owls and cats. There's quite a bit to that, and not just in looks also. But they love to eat rabbits, so that's a staple in their diet. But actually getting to see them pursue prey, that's something that very few people get to see.
Yeah, because it happens at night.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. They don't hunt at all. Do they hunt at all in the day?
I would never say no, but their preference is not to hunt during the day, because if they're active during the day, crows hate great horned owls. If they spy a great horned owl, they'll come just screaming after it, and they're caw, 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 and they're dive bombing, and all their friends come in. So they call it mobbing. So the owls are trying very hard not to be visible during the day so they don't get mobbed by crows. And if you're a screech owl, it's going to be blue jays and smaller birds that typically mob you. But if hard pressed, they will hunt during the day. The ones that typically don't, like great horn, barred, and screech. So, for instance, if they're raising young and have a lot of mouths to feed, because dad has to feed all the kids, mom, and himself when those kids are really young, so he may wind up hunting around the clock. So, early spring is more typically when you might see one actively hunting during the day, and that's probably dad trying to feed a lot of hungry mouths. And then, if a bird, of course, is not getting enough to eat otherwise, you may see them hunting during the day.
Hmm. Thanks again for that call. Anne in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Anne.
Hello. I'm just wondering, I know loss of habitat and noise pollution and light pollution is affecting a lot of the species, but which ones are affecting more? And I'm, you know, wondering what's being done to try to preserve some of the habitats and quiet places and places without light.
Yeah,
humans, when it comes to, a lot of wildlife, but especially owls, humans are the biggest problem. And habitat, of course, is a big issue, especially when you get into owls that are living on little islands, like out in the Philippines, where you have one owl species that lives only on this one little island, and they're deforesting it to do agriculture or other things so that the people literally can survive. And those are really difficult situations. Around here, when we start cutting down a lot of trees, it just kind of changes the mix of owls. So great horned owls do well where there's some trees and some openings. So some places where there has been thick woods that have been good perhaps for barred owls, and those are thinned out or developments have put in, the great horns may move in where there have been barred owls in the past. So there are some species like screech owls and barred owls that do adapt fairly well to being around people. So it changes the mix. You know, spotted owls, they need thick forest. And, of course, they're out in the Pacific Northwest and doing very poorly because we've been removing the old-growth forest. And now the other problem is humans have planted trees across the Great Plains in the places where there weren't trees. So barred owls have spread out there, and they're kind of like the big, bad, mean cousin of the spotted owls. And they kill them, they out-compete them, and the spotted owls are declining severely because of the barred owls out there due to our habitat change, us humans changing things. And that is just kind of this ethical dilemma. What do you do when you have an endangered species that's declining severely, rapidly, and you can't just replant old-growth forest because it takes hundreds of years for it to be proper habitat. And then you have these barred owls there. So they've actually tried experimental removal, which is a nice way of saying they're shooting the barred owls.
Ah.
Highly controversial. So I've talked to some of the spotted owl biologists about this and their thoughts on it. And initially you look at it and say, oh my gosh, you can't shoot one species to help another one. And they've only done it on a limited experimental basis at this point. But what they found in that experiment was the places where they removed the barred owls were the only places that the spotted owls instantly started making a comeback. And it's not just the spotted owls that they're harming. They're killing the western screech owls and other species that never had to deal with pressure of barred owls eating them before because big owls eat little owls. So you've got this really icky ethical dilemma of, what do you do? And it's us. It's human caused. We planted things where they shouldn't be and helped the barred owl get out there. So, you know, they're trying experimental removal. They don't have any great solutions at this stage of the game. So that's kind of the biggest one where we're dealing with habitat. Light pollution, I don't know, is a giant problem for owls because owls do use their vision when they're hunting also, and a little supplemental light actually just makes it a little bit easier for them to hunt. So that's probably not a key issue for owls. Some of the bigger ones are rodenticides. They're finding that of the generalist predators, things like great horned owls, barred owls, barn owls, 60 to 100% have one or more rodenticides in their systems from eating poisoned rodents.
Wow.
Yeah, it's huge. I would say on average most of those studies are showing up around 80%. So that's totally human-caused and easy to fix if everybody switched to using traps instead of poison to control rodents. And it actually winds up working better because you're not poisoning your natural rodent control in the process. So that's probably the biggest one for that owls are facing is the rodenticides that the humans are using.
You know, the comments on habitat were good ones, and it kind of goes along with what Kyle in Milwaukee emailed. He wondered if you could attract owls to his woods near his house.
Yeah, there are some things that you can do, and on our website we actually have a section on humans and owls, and then there's one thing that's one of the links on there is how to live an owl-friendly life. So some of the things you can do if you want to attract them, obviously you can put up nesting structures if you're in a place where you can have screech owls, barred owls, saw-whet owls, or other owls that would use nest boxes. But another real important thing is mowing less lawn. You know, there's so many people that have huge mowed expanses of lawn, but lawn doesn't, you know, perfectly manicured lawns don't support the things that great horned owls and other owls need to eat. So if you can let it go wild or plant natives, you know, if you live in a city, you can't just say, I'm not mowing my lawn because it's going to attract food for owls to eat. They have ordinances against that. But if you plant natives and landscape with natives, you're more likely to have critters in there for the owls to eat, which is then in turn going to attract the owls to be there. So those are a couple of things. And then, of course, avoid using rodenticides. That's a really big one. So those are a few of the things you'll find. And then if you have old barbed wire, taking that down is really good also, because owls and sometimes hawks get tangled up in old barbed wire fences.
Lynn in La Crosse emailed to say that she would highly recommend the Owl Festival. The town and school are transformed, much like a town would be for a professional sports team and some finals, into an owl wonderland. Many happy memories of taking her daughter to the Owl Festival.
Great. Wonderful.
That's pretty cool. You talked about so many of the things, and I don't remember if you mentioned the real life great horned owl soap opera.
Oh, that's one program that I do, and it's something. It's based on the vocal research that I'm doing on great horned owls. So my goal was to learn what great horned owls say and why they say it, and document all of this. But in the process of figuring that out, we kind of had this soap opera happen between the wild owls and our captive owls. And I realized going through that you can identify each individual bird by voice. So if you just keep listening every night, you hear where they are and who they're hooting with and what's going on. And it's a soap opera, like, better than on TV. Unbelievable. You couldn't make this stuff up. So rather than this being the dry, boring version of what I found out about the different types of vocalizations, this is the juicy version of what actually played out in real life for me to be able to figure out the vocalizations.
Oh, man, that sounds great. And that's, are you giving that presentation more than once, or when do you do that?
That one is going to be on Sunday, and let me double check the time, because we had to sort some things around. Sunday morning at 11, Sunday, March 4th.
Sunday, March 4th, and the event is on from the 2nd through the 4th.
Yes.
And are there other events, by the way, coming up relating to your center?
We always have things going on. So we always encourage people to subscribe to our e-newsletter, and then you find out everything that's going on. This Saturday, we have a pellet dissection day. So during the winter, once a month, we'll have one day designated as a pellet dissection day. So if you come to the Owl Center and pay your regular admission, or you get in free if you're a member, we have pellets that you get to dissect, and we help you dissect. Now, you can also do it at the Owl Festival, too. But at the Owl Center, we just do it during the winter once a month. And we do have some other special programs going on every now and then. But right now, our big focus is the Owl Festival. So we just have that pellet dissection going on, and then we hit the Owl Festival after that.
And again, for let's say for that e-news center, how do you get involved with that, or how do you get signed up for it?
All you do is go to our website, internationalowlcenter.org, and there'll be a little box that pops up. And you can just click on that, and it'll take you to a place where you can sign up for our e-newsletter.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the festival itself, most of this, I mean, of course, you're going to pay for your food and so forth, but a lot of this is free for just showing up, right?
If you're a member, most of it is free. Unless you're doing some other things. The daily admission price for adults is $10. For kids ages 4 to 17 is $6, and 3 and under are free. So we encourage that if people want to come multiple days, or if they want to come to the Owl Center at another time of year, to become a member. So individual membership starts at $25, household membership is $45, and then you get all kinds of other perks throughout the year. You get discounts in the gift shop, you get discounts on programs, you get discounted admission at the Minnesota Marine Art Museum and National Eagle Center. So you get quite a lot with your membership. And then, of course, being a member, you're helping to support our owl education efforts.
Well, I tell you what, it's always a pleasure to be able to talk with you, Carla. And I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's a real pleasure. Thanks, Carla.
Thanks for having me on. I always like to talk about owls.
Carla Bloom is Executive Director of the International Owl Center, based in Houston, Minnesota. And the festival is March 2nd through the 4th. In Houston. It's going to be a lot of fun for sure. Thank you all for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.